It is August 11th, 2021. This is Atlanta United FC Weekly, a Home Before Dark podcast. Oh, no sound on mine. I don't know. How are you doing this evening, Daniel? What are you drinking?
Good. On? Is that some Bullet?
Yeah, I got the Bullet 10 tonight.
Nice. Staying a little Herradura Reposado.
Okay. How's it going, man?
Not too bad, Kev. Yeah. Weirdly, I listened to a pod I think we did about 2 weeks ago that only just got uploaded.
Hey, you know, whenever you're pulling 70 and 80 hour work weeks, some things have to get moved to the back. The highlight of last week's, or yeah, it wasn't 2 weeks, it was last week. Highlight of last week's episode was that I made two predictions that were both correct.
Oh God, here we go. But then I also said that
there's no way that this team is going to beat Columbus. Both you and Tim both. Yep. Shamed me for calling an Atlanta win against Columbus. And had you known that Joseph Martinez would not play in that game, I probably would have gotten shamed more. And yet here we are after a 3-2 win and a draw against Montreal. So two more points for your boy. And actually, we're going to make it three because I called for Columbus that one of Atlanta's goals would be by Barco, and he did score one of those goals. He actually scored two. So
he scored a beautiful goal. Holy moly, that first goal was awesome.
So great. I did call the fluke Sosa goal, so I didn't get anything for goals against Montreal, but I got one for the result and then two for result and goal score against Columbus. Tim does get 1 point for his 3-2 call for Montreal. As he predicted that Joseph would score two, with Sadich scoring the third. Joseph did score in that game, so he picks up 1 point there. So he has two now for the season.
Two whole points?
Two whole points to so our boy.
What are the standings then?
Well, I'm well ahead. And you're in second, and Tim's in third.
I'm sorry. I meant the point totals.
Oh, I'd have to go through and add them all up. I've just got them all on all.
Okay. So it's not really official that you're in the lead. It's just that you haven't done the math.
What? Oh, it's official, Dan.
I'm clutching at straws, Kev. I'm clutching at straws.
Very well official. Very, very well official. Thank you to everyone who came and tuned in tonight. If you want to make sure you get a notification whenever we go live each and every week, be sure to go over to YouTube. I think we have a bit.ly link, bit.ly/H4D YouTube or something like that. Anyway, go over to YouTube. Be sure to like, subscribe. Maybe it's Get Home Before Dark or homebefore.dark.youtube. I don't know what the link is. Just go to YouTube. It's easy to find. However you found us, like, subscribe, hit the bell icon to find out whenever we go live. That said, everybody tuning in, hanging out in the trap, Elliot Beaven, Chiefs coach Steve, Max Plays Games. Who else we got? Kendrick Brock already with the Pineda out hashtag. First to lead the charge there. Never too early to rebel against a coach.
He's never won an MLS game as a head coach. So,
That's true. Joe Johnstone, Sal Lopez. Who else we got in here? I think that's it for right now. I'm sure Brittany S. is lurking in the shadows, and Michelle will be joining us shortly. Always keeping an eye out for those two. Again, we are recording on Wednesday night, so that's where it comes in, helping to hit that bell icon to get a notification. Unfortunately, between work and other commitments this week, Tim won't be here, and we had to reschedule from Monday to tonight for Dan and I. So
That's right.
Anyway, excited to be here. So with that, maybe before we get into the games, we can finally have a breaking news time where we're recording and we get news about the team, and it's not the day after we record, which is nice. So I don't know if you saw the tweet that had just come out. I mean, it was at like an hour ago that it came out. Yeah. So Nico Moreno he tweeted something that's kind of blowing up right now. It hasn't been confirmed or anything, but he tweeted, this is at El Rolo NW on Twitter. I'm told that Sounders assistant coach Gonzalo Pineda has come to terms with Atlanta United and will be signed to a 3-year contract, putting him in charge of the team immediately. We will wait for official word from either Seattle or Atlanta, but it appears the deal is done. Obviously there's been a lot of speculation about that happening. I think Felipe said yesterday, no official report as of that time. But it seems like there are some reports coming out, from within that organization that he would be coming over here. I know that he was not present for the Sounders most recent game that they had. So that may be a sign that that is heading in that direction, but I would expect for us to get some sort of direction or confirmation here soon, one way or the other. I think what Felipe had said yesterday from Boca Negra was that obviously, you know, they're looking at a lot of different people or something along those lines. So nothing definitive yet on that front, but a big jump from the 10 months it took us between our last two managers to the 150 days or whatever it's been since since we released Heinze to pick up Pineda potentially. So it was 140. I'm gotta shout out Ronald Pena over at Parceros United. He said it was 147 days is how long it took Atlanta United to announce Heinze after Frank DeBoer's mutual parting. It's 24 days now since Heinze's firing. So less than a month and potentially getting a new manager in.
How many games did Stephen Glass win? Was it two?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it had to be more than that because we sacked Frank at the MLS's back tournament and we still had like 15 or 16 games after that. Surely we didn't only win two games on the back half of the season last year, did we?
Probably not. We probably won more than that. But I was trying to think like how many, because I guess the RV, as I like to call him, has only won one. Only won one. That's been his entire impact. Yeah. I'm kidding, of course. And then I was trying to think about how Stephen Glass was.
I'm pulling it up now to see when
I think when you compare the two, I was a lot more excited about Rob Valentino because we've had like this dearth of play since basically the beginning of 2020. Yeah. And 5 wins for Glass, thanks Kendrick Brock. Kendrick, how many games did he play, and then what's the winning ratio for all of those, please?
Yeah,
it's 809. See how long it takes Kendrick.
So what Matt Wasniewski, good to see you in the trap too. Looks like Pineda's guy from Nico Moreno, which we had mentioned. Kendrick Brock, saying jokes aside, Pineda's a great hire, hopefully can be a long-term successful manager for our club. Kendrick also coming in with the 4 draws and 10 losses on that. So what is that, 19 games by my math? So almost 50-50 split there between results versus losses, I guess, if you want to kind of break it out that way.
About that. Man, it's better than Heinze.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
With minus a DP.
Yeah. What up, Ron? So, yeah, as we were mentioning, Ron actually in the trap with us tonight. So good to have you here, man. How are you feeling about the signing? How's everybody feeling about the signing? How are you feeling about the signing? Potentially, Dan, if it goes through. Obviously we have another signing to also talk about before we even get into the games, which we may see this weekend, but we'll see.
Oh yeah. Pineda. I'm quietly optimistic about it. I think, you know, I just look, all you can do is look at Seattle's success and just assume that he has a large part in that. I think the players love him. He's widely regarded as the best assistant in the league. I'm hoping. So, yeah, I think it's a funny, like, you go from Tata Martino to Frank de Boer to Gabriel Heinze, and then to be trying to wine and dine Fonseca, and then you go to an assistant head coach in the MLS. It seems like it's a weird bouncing around. Like, where's your priority? Like, where are you heading? It seems kind of a little bit scattershot, but I would hope that Pineda does really well here. He's got to have a whole bunch of discipline. I mean, if you've got the likes of players like Stephen Fry, trying to think of some other Seattle stalwarts. But if you've got the respect of those players, I mean, you've got to have the respect of the Atlanta United players, like these young, you know, we're one of the youngest squads in the league. So you've got to be really excited about what he can bring. And definitely, you know, Seattle, like, they don't seem to have any sort of, like, identity that's apart from they just seem to
always
react
be in contention.
And always be in contention. Like, yeah, just they play every game to win, and it doesn't matter how they do it. So you would imagine someone who's been involved in a sort of a culture like that is got to be great for MLS, yeah, and it's got to be great from young kids coming up, like the Ibarras, Lopez, you know, Sosa, all of the guys. So it's going to be really interesting.
Well, especially for guys getting into the league to kind of get their, you know, get their bearings, so to speak, on how things operate and how things are run internally, and also just how to manage that schedule and managing players, I think, within rotation, which was maybe one of the shortcomings of Heinze, where players just sort of, you know, a lot of those injuries weren't necessarily game-worn injuries. They were arguably from overexertion and overtraining and stuff like that. And we can go round and round about whether or not a lot of those accounts that surfaced were legitimate or not. But it's pretty clear that there was very little rotation in those lineups, and a lot of those players were fatigued out of playing week over week. So I don't know, man. I think that it's, so how much stock do you put it? Because correct me if I'm wrong, Frank de Boer had a 5-year contract, right?
Oh man, I can't remember. Surely something like along those lines. Maybe
I thought
two or three years.
So that's what I was gonna say. It's like, I don't really put a whole lot of stock in a 3-year contract. I mean, it's especially with Atlanta's track record right now. It's like, even if they bring him in, they'll just buy him out, you know.
Well, that, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, I don't really think anything of the length of the contract.
Exactly.
If he has results, they'll offer him a longer one, and if he doesn't, then they'll get rid of him. You know, it's
exactly,
I guess it's like how much, like you're saying, how much are we willing to buy out if it doesn't go well?
Right. You know, I think that picking up, so there's going to be some growing pains, right? Like he's unproven, I guess, as a manager, but it's, every manager has to start somewhere, so to speak. And it's like, it's not like he's just going from, how do I put this? It's not like he's made the transition from being a player to all of a sudden being a coach. Like, he's gone through the ranks and sort of learned, and the next logical step would be for him to be a head coach. And that's got to be somewhere. I don't know why, yeah, it wouldn't be. You know, it seems like it would be a good fit with good timing right now, when we get the benefit of kind of onboarding him mid-season, in that it's like the sky's the limit right now. Like, it was kind of the same thing we're talking about RV, right? Like, there's no real downside to it. He's just brought in to kind of keep the ship afloat and try not to tank everything. And if there's some results and Atlanta makes a run, great. I think it's the same thing for a new manager, right? Like, we're not going to put so much pressure that all of a sudden he's got to bring us to the top of the East, because we're in a position where that's just not logistically possible at this point. But if he somehow starts to get things clicking and has some time with the players to kind of build some trust and loyalty, and also some actual chemistry within the locker room and on the field, that's certainly a positive going into next season and in any roster moves that they take in the offseason, to know what he'll have a better understanding of what the holes are and what he's wanting to deploy with the team, which I think is beneficial rather than him coming in the offseason, which is what's happened the past couple of years. So I think from that standpoint, it's really good, and I'm glad that they did that sooner rather than later, which they hadn't done previously.
I think that's a good point, because he's going to have more of the intangibles that you need for specifically for MLS and how it is such a funky league. And I just go back to Seattle again. I mean, they've beaten every single team in the league.
Right, right.
We haven't. We haven't beaten Seattle. We've never beaten we've never beaten Red Wolves in the regular season.
Red Wolves, that's it.
We have beaten Toronto. There's another team. Well, we haven't played Austin. We've never beaten Miami.
Miami, that's right.
And I think there's one more. But the names, but there are some weird random teams that we haven't. Yeah. But Seattle's thrashed everyone, well, not thrashed, but got the best of.
Yeah. So some comments from around the trap here. Ron mentioning the signing's okay. What's more important is the project the front office has for the near future. I still don't think the front office has a clear plan. Jay Hennibal, I'll let you know about the signing once we get past LAFC. Max plays games. I'm digging it. He just about hits our needs right on the head. I tend to agree with a lot of that stuff. Like Kendrick Brock echoed that the Sounders at Heart articles about him and Atlanta United have been very complimentary of him. I think it's certainly a positive. We talked about this early on. Like, does Atlanta go for someone that has MLS, like an MLS veteran in the coaching carousel, so to speak? Like, I think this is the next best thing, obviously, like, because I feel like there's going to be more of a give and take. And I think that Rob Boostery kind of touched on this earlier today, where it's like, there's no talk about a system right now bringing him in, right? Like I think that he's just as moldable and adaptable transitioning into a head coaching role as the team also needs to be right now, where we need to figure out how these things can work together. And I think that's what has honestly been good about this tenure under RV lately, is like, mm-hmm. You saw that against Columbus, especially, where it's like, just go play. And I think as the team does that more, you can address some of the chemistry issues that we were like, that's consistently been lagging over the past couple of years. Like, my God, if that could be summed up in one play, the link up play to start that game with Barco's goal between, you know, the way that that buildup took place with the layoff from Bello and the distribution pattern that took place in that lead up, like, that's what this team really needs. And I think that if you have a manager and have an extended period of time where the players can naturally figure some of that stuff out for themselves, you can try to mold that into some sort of a system rather than trying to force all the players into a system that prohibits any of that chemistry from ever being able to develop. And it's just sort of pigeonholed into something that it maybe doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're allowing players to play to their strengths, which right. I think that Seattle do that fair amount. The frustrating thing for me, and just kind of tempers my excitement on it, is I don't know how much is him, how much is Schmetzer. There's a lot of faith that we're putting into this hire that we don't know, that are just educated guesses. There's no like tape that we can watch that he's like, okay, well, this is what he tends to do. Yeah. And from an outside perspective, we just don't know what goes on in the locker room. We don't know what goes on with those meetings or media availability or anything like that. So, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think
that's the best way anybody can be right now, because it is, I mean, I think that there's enough to be optimistic about, like you said, like there's enough there that you're like, oh, this could really work. There's also a lot that it's like, I can see this not working out, but are we really in any worse shape than we are right now anyway? Like, again, it's like, it's kind of found money if it works out, because the team as it stands currently and as it's been run, at least from a culture standpoint, it seems like from inside the organization has just not been what it needs to be. And maybe maybe he can get it there and start to create its own. Like, all I want is a manager to create not just results on the field, but a culture inside the locker room. And that, I think that's what's been so successful about what Seattle's done year over year with the players that come in and out, is they've formed some sort of a player culture within the organization that Atlanta United, I just don't know, has really found it yet. You know, there's been talks from manager to manager about how to employ that. You know, it's the European pipeline, the South American pipeline, and having casual sort of pickup games before our matches, because that's a very South American sort of approach to how you get ready for a game versus rigid training before a game, and like that kind of stuff, and how involved the coaches are in the players' lives. But like, there's still just no consistency or overall exuberance of a culture or just a joy from the player standpoint as a cohesive unit, I feel like. But we're starting to see some spark of that right now, coming off of a really great win for the team. So,
yeah, I think, and that's one thing I think Avi's done well, is he's let the guys play comfortably. Like, he's let them make the decisions of how they want to play, so they automatically will play to their strengths. So you imagine, well, I imagine anyway, that Pineda would come in, just observe for a game or two, and then see how we can make tweaks here and there. One good thing about it is he's probably going to be keeping Rob Valentino around, because
that was what I was going
to He doesn't have any pre-established backroom staff. So maybe we grab a couple
how
more
great
guys
would that
from
be,
Seattle.
Man? I mean, like, yeah, it seems like it's going really well. Like, I think that if you can build on that and kind of get him to learn from what Pineda's been doing in that role, and he maybe takes on that role here for Atlanta, and then obviously he's taking, there's like this sort of sharing of information regardless of title. Like, I think that that could be a really good approach to this entire scenario, to where, again, players aren't just getting this whiplash of going from manager to manager and approach to training versus games and how to conduct themselves on and off the field, to just allowing them to be players and figure out some of this stuff on the field together, you know?
Yeah. I think having Rob will be, it'll be a foolish move if Pineda doesn't keep him on, because Rob's got the respect of the players and everything. Agreed. And I feel like there was, I mean, Ron Parceros, I guess that's Ron in the trap, saying there won't be a culture as long as Bocanegra is there. Well, I disagree, because I feel like, I mean, Tata had established a culture.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I mean, Frank de Boer probably wasn't here long enough, but it wasn't a touchy-feely, nice, happy culture.
Right.
And Heinze wasn't here long enough, and obviously Glass. And it seems like Rob Valentino is the one guy that's kind of been that constant thread. So hopefully Pineda can come and create a positive culture. And because I feel like Rob has started laying the foundations right now, that we're all seeing this come to fruition. So, Bocanegra does come across as a very sort of regimented, zero personality kind of guy. I mean, I'm not trying to defend the guy, but I don't know. I'm surprised. I'll be surprised how long he sticks around. But if all this goes well and Atlanta United are successful in the next season or so, I mean, he's probably going to be here to stay. So I feel like they're not just going to get rid of him if we're winning.
No, absolutely.
So it's kind of like we want him to be here because that will mean the team's doing well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
So maybe switching our attention to the other signing and announcement that came through for the team over the past week, which Brittany S. had a question on, which was about if Luis's visa had come through yet. I think that from what I've read, that's going to be close to a game time decision, from what I saw in the press conference and what had been reported online from others, that I think that they're still awaiting a couple of those things to be finalized. He's here, obviously, and I think he's probably getting involved in some training. But as far as whether or not he'll be available to actually play on Sunday, it's the jury's still out right now until they get all that figured out. So,
yeah Kendrick, which saying,
Brock said the same thing. Yes.
Yeah. He can practice but not play. Yeah, again. Right. So I'm feeling cautiously optimistic about this signing. What I've seen from tape, what I kind of feel like he could do for us, I feel like this could be an excellent signing. Because, you know, he's very, very technical. He can dribble circles around entire teams, it seems, from the highlights, granted, right. They're highlights. But he seemed one thing that one of the best things I think is his attitude is positive. And he comes in his press conference and he says, I want to show the MLS who I am. I want them to show who Luis Araujo is. I want to win the league with this team. So you kind of got to really get behind that. You know, it's a sort of a Miguel Almirón sort of personality that we want to see there. So what do you think? The pity replacement, Kevin?
I hope not too. Yeah, exactly. Maybe what pity was supposed to be, maybe. Parcero's commenting, just hope he doesn't sky a single shot for the sake of y'all's sanity. I hope that you guys don't buy into him before he's played a match and then he skies every shot for your sanity. So to Dan's point, I'm also cautiously optimistic. I guess my concern with him is, like you said, like it's a highlight reel right now, obviously has a really successful season this past year. And was really a player that probably could have gone elsewhere with his stock being as high as it was, I would assume, coming off of that season there. But with that said, like, I think that he's taking a very humble approach here, and I think that he's got a much different circumstance than Pity, that he's not coming in with all these expectations leveraged upon him as a DP and like how much he's costing the team and South American player of the year and everything else that I think Pity came along with. Maybe he won't be as lazy as Pity was, to Kendrick Brock's point. But at the same time, like, I think that maybe to Elliot Beavitt's point, maybe he's the Tito replacement. And maybe he's not a replacement at all. He could just be his own thing, which is what I'm really hoping for, because I think he has to be able to fit into this lineup wherever he's going to go. And I think that that's my biggest cause for concern right now, is I don't know how he fits in here. From what I was reading, he's more naturally a right winger. That way he can pull the ball over to his left foot. But obviously, like, he can be deployed on the left side, but you've got Barco and Moreno kind of sharing duties there. On the right side, he's competing with Lennon. But also, like, he could potentially slot in behind Joseph, from what I was reading in another article. So I don't know how he fits in to this whole thing.
So I think two things going back to, I think that it's right to have expectations on him as a DP. But the thing with Pity was he won South American Player of the Year. So there it seemed was like, oh, well, this guy should just be coming in like Messi, just destroying things to the lay soccer fan.
Right. Right.
And it's almost like we ended up buying him up here when we should have bought him down here. But that's what awards and accolades do. They inflate your price. So I think there was, and you know, coming off of selling Almirón, and like he's just, they're two different types of players. So I think there were way too much unwarranted expectations on Pity. But as a DP, you absolutely should have expectations on you. I think, you know, you're a DP, you should be able to perform under pressure. So to the fit, I actually feel like, you know, I want a winger on either side, and I want my wingers inverted because I want them to be able to cut in. So if you have So if you set him up with like Moreno in the middle, which I think he's best centrally, Barco on the left, Araujo on the right, Joseph in the middle, then you kind of attack in with all four of those guys. And then if you have Bello and Lennon pushing up on the wings, you've got a potential attacking six players. And then you've got potentially Rosetto right behind to clear up any loose balls. And then you'd have that back three of Robinson, Sosa, and Walks when you're in attack mode. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I feel it fits in. I feel like it's just going to have a really good front three right behind Joseph, regardless of how you play it, whether you play a 3-5-2, whether you play a 4-2-3-1. I feel like just guys like that are going to be really good, because that's what we've needed. You know, the argument with Heinze was our defense was great, but they would let in goals because our offense just couldn't do anything.
Right.
But now we've seen more shots and stuff, and our defense is kind of, you know, I think we're just getting back on the wagon with Robinson being out and Walks and Franco not having as much of an established relationship. So I think it's a good signing on paper until we actually see some results.
Right. Agreed. I think it's just, there's too many unknowns. I won't put the kind of pressure that Kendrick is saying he needs a combination of at least 10 goals and assists for the rest of the season, in his opinion. I don't know about that. A more important question, I think, is Alex Hoffner, which I think is a new name in the trap, which thanks for joining us if it is. Do we make the playoffs with the new signing? With the new signing versus because of the new signing are two different questions, I think. But is that the difference maker potentially for the team? I think it certainly could be if we're creating more chances. And if Columbus isn't just a one-off game to Max Plays Games points where it's, you know, what I saw in that Columbus game was great. But I also saw great games early on in this season, and then the team wasn't producing that level of chance creation and opportunities for long stretches of time after that. Columbus was a great game, don't get me wrong, and it was a great game without Joseph Martinez in the lineup. So,
yeah, it was.
What I think is a promising trend outside of just the Luis signing is that the team is starting to get healthy again. They seem to be playing in a different sort of mentality where they seem like they're enjoying the game rather than it just being a job, for lack of a better term. And they're actually doing things that we hadn't seen them do. And again, it's a small sample size, but this Columbus game is the one result in the past 13 matches where Atlanta gets a win. However, there were other matches where Atlanta drew or even took a loss over the past four games where they are creating those chances and are looking much better on the ball. I think my biggest cause for concern right now is that though the Columbus result did take place, this team consistently drops goals late in matches when they're in a position to win. They've done that on multiple occasions this year. They let in very sloppy goals on defense with a defense that is surrounded by and staffed by veteran leadership, including Miles and Walks and Bell, like these players that we know are really talented. It's Sosa back there. You know, you can't let in the slop goals. Like, great goals are going to happen, but you can't just let in the trash. And so, like, defensively giving up games late. And in these past two games, three of the five goals were scored off of PKs. Like, that's also something that you've got to take into consideration there, because this isn't, though they're creating chances, absolutely. And yes, that's a positive trend. It's not like that's five goals that were all scored in the run of play. That's over 50% were from PK, you know?
Yeah. I get your thing on the PK. The way I look at PKs is you're producing pressure on a defense, and the defense makes a stupid move to try and push you off. So I don't have a problem with penalties. I know it makes people feel better about it when they're from the run of play. But I'll take
own goals. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't think so. I've been perseverating on this. I'm I don't think we make the playoffs. I think it's going to be, I think we may win more games with Araujo than we would without him. I saw Brittany in the trap. Dang, what if we finish eighth? I kind of think like eighth, ninth is probably where we're going to end up, because we're 6 points behind the playoff line.
Yeah.
And then Red Bulls, who are ninth, so we're 10th, Red Bulls are ninth. They have a game in hand on us. And also Miami have a game in hand on us, and they're only 2 points behind us. Miami have two games in hand. So that's potential 6 points that would, you know, kick us out of contention. And then Cincinnati have a game in hand, and they're also 2 points behind us. So, you know, if we can take, we play Miami two more times this year, and, you know, they've suddenly put together a decent, well, I think they've won the last two games. But I feel like we're too much in a hole to dig ourselves out. I am happy to be proved wrong. I would love us to make the playoffs, because I think if we made the playoffs, we would have a really good mentality to in a knockout competition, because we'd have a huge chip on our shoulder. I don't think it's possible. I think it's too much of a hill to climb.
Can we just talk about how New England is silently putting together this run of a season that they're on right now, currently sitting at 40 points with a 10-point lead in the East and 6 points ahead of Sporting KC in the Supporter Shield race right now?
Yeah.
Like, that's wild. Like, I mean, maybe it's just my own blindness to other games around the league this season, or inability to really watch a lot of that stuff. But, you know, sitting there with a 13 goal differential with a significant lead on both teams trailing them with the most wins, obviously the most points, but also with, you know, of their 19 matches, 12 of them are wins. Like, that's a pretty incredible season. And we've still got 15 games left to play, but still.
Yeah.
You know, Dan, to your point, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, and it's going to take us dropping a couple of those matches that we have coming up in the next couple of weeks. But I think that the back half of this season for Atlanta United is really favorable for them to make a run with everything else that is coming in, whether it's through players or managers or just feel good vibes for the team right now. Like, I think I don't think that this team all of a sudden is in third in the East by any means, but I can see us sneaking into that sixth or seventh spot in the East for sure, but it's going to take some things kind of going our way to build on to make that possible for sure.
Yeah, and that's what scares me. Like, if we won, I feel like realistically it's going to be dependent on other teams slipping up.
Yeah,
and I don't like for that to be the case for my team. To win an MLS Cup, you have to have elements of luck.
Oh yeah.
And you're right. I mean, they very may well clubs could slip up and, you know, afford us the opportunity and we could sneak in. If we get into the playoffs, I feel like the only way is we sneak in, but
I don't think we make a run for the cup. I'm not saying that, but I think that it would be a making the playoffs is a consolation prize for this season and this team. And I think that's a big win. Like, that's the equivalent of winning the cup for this, the way this season has gone. Let's be honest.
I feel like if we've got in, we've done really well.
Absolutely. And
then if we've got in, I also feel like we're heating up at that time.
Right.
So I feel like we have a really good core team of players. You know, barring any injuries, I think we have a lot of talent on this squad, but I feel like the depth drops pretty significantly just because of the youth of players.
Right.
So if we get in, I've if we get in, I feel like we could actually make a decent run at a cup in a knockout
tournament.
That'd
be awesome, man. That'd be really awesome.
I just don't think we get in.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. So maybe that should be our time to start talking about the game and our depth. So this week, let's talk about players, then we can talk about some stuff specific to games. So like I said earlier, we're seeing the team get healthy again, which is really nice. A couple of really big pieces in that health and additions to the lineup are Hosetu and Dom, which we had not seen since the first couple of weeks of the season. And I think both had pretty significant performances over the past couple of games. What were your thoughts on those two? I mean, in my opinion, I think those are the biggest additions to this roster currently that we hadn't had previously. And while you're talking, I need to go get a tissue to blow my nose. Go ahead.
So we want to talk about Montreal first. Okay. I think Dam's garbage. I can't stand him. I think he's made an impact in terms of maybe one cross, but I just am not a fan of Dam. I mean, if he gets games under his belt, then maybe he can get some momentum going with the way he plays. But I'm hoping that Aruju is gonna make Dam completely obsolete, even more so. So I'm not happy with Dam. I thought Rosetto was a very well, tell you what, let's just say, can we just look at Montreal first and then maybe we can go to
that
Columbus?
Sounds great.
Because I think Rosetto played awesome in Columbus. I was really happy with him.
Oh, absolutely.
I thought Montreal, it was interesting. They just where's my notes on Montreal? Okay, so sorry, Kevin. Totally unprepared.
So Montreal, I'll start off. So I thought that in the Montreal game, the second half was certainly the highlight for both teams in that, that matchup. I mean, the first half was just a damn snoozer, man. There wasn't really much of anything that happened there. And obviously there was a lot of fireworks at the end of the Montreal match, which we'll talk about with Joseph and the red card and the choke slams and all that other fun stuff. But as far as just operationally speaking in the run of play, like there just wasn't really a whole lot in that first half from either side. And I think that started to open up a lot more in the second half. I got to give at least some credit to Atlanta, who was down 2-0. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were down 2-0 and we're at like the 65th minute whenever that takes place at that point, you know, for them to be able to fight back, Joseph sort of leading that charge with a great goal to sort of open that up with the counter after, I think it was just a couple minutes after Montreal had scored their second. But yeah, I mean, I loved seeing the team fight back. I know I mentioned Hosetu and Dom, which I thought that, and I'm not saying that Dom's like a DP level player, but it's nice to have somebody in that rotation whenever you haven't really had anybody. Like, we've got to
get that's true.
I will say that Hosetu has been head and shoulders above Dom's performance, but I don't think that Dom has been, you know, at the level of just non-serviceable or the level of frustrations that I have with someone like Kubo Torres, for example. You know, it's obviously a smaller sample size, but I didn't think that either one of them put us in a position to lose that Montreal game. And if anything, they helped us to get that lead because they helped set up some of that stuff, particularly with that first goal for Joseph, you know?
Yeah. I think so. What I loved about the first goal for Joseph was, I mean, just like the first goal against Columbus, Barco going on an absolute tear of a run up the middle of the field.
Absolutely.
And then passing it off.
Yeah.
In motion, like passing off, and he kept going. Yeah. So he passed it off to Joseph. Joseph, I think Joseph still does a lot to score that goal. But it was fantastic. It was great seeing that that grit and determination from the team. And just seeing Joseph angry, like he looked pissed off and wanted that. I feel like we've all been dying to see that for God knows how long.
Well, he also got some service that we hadn't seen. Yeah. Like, he almost gets on the end of that one header. I mean, it was just a couple of inches off from that upper left-hand corner of the mm-hmm. goal. Like, I mean, again, that's where getting these players in the lineup and getting them healthy to where you're not just having to rely on USL players. As much as I love Tyler Wolf and Jackson Conway, they're not – I mean, Tyler Wolf just had a hat trick, but that's besides the
point. you can't compare USL. I mean
– But, yeah, I mean, without having to depend on those players week in and week out, like, it's good to see these players healthy and actually getting some link-up play with Joseph, who needs that – like, he needs that distribution to be successful. He's not the type of player that's going to create those chances – on an individual level, right? Like, I think that Moreno or Barco will do that more times than not than Joseph is going to in the run of play. Like, Joseph needs that distribution to get on the end of headers or those trailing balls behind a defense or whatever.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I feel like there just needs to be more energy going forth in general, and not have to be in these holes of during matches to claw its way out. Like, we just want to impose our will immediately, like we did at for the first 5 minutes in Orlando.
And we did it against Columbus.
Yeah, we did really well against Columbus. Yeah. We did really well against them. Yeah. And Montreal, I mean, maybe that was the turning point, that one right there. Like, maybe that, because apparently I was listening to Longshore, and he was saying that how disrespectful the Montreal players were being in time-wasting after their second goal. And Joseph was like, this is bullshit.
Oh, yeah, they didn't even get, like, he scored his goal, and the keeper, like, just threw it off to the side, like, Joseph goes up to get the ball to go set it at the half point so that they could get started. And the keeper, like, threw it off to the side. Joseph's like, what the fuck are you doing, man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So fantastic. But yeah, it's great to see what we're seeing from Barco. I feel like he's been a new man since he came back from the Olympics. To be honest with you, Kev, I didn't think we were ever going to see it again.
I didn't either. I thought we were just going to sell him, take the L, and just move on. I thought that was how we were going to get Luis signed in anyway, was just try to make moves, man.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why Barco started playing good. He was like, shit, we got somebody coming in. I need to show out here.
Well, it was all the Almeida rumors, because rumor is we have signed Almeida. We just... he's coming in January, but I'll believe it when he's holding the shirt. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe Barco was like, oh shit, I actually need to do something, or otherwise I'm probably going back to either Saudi, where I don't want to be, or back to South America when he really wants to make a move over to Europe.
Because
he's going to want a little bit of fanfare when he comes into Europe. But man, that ruckus in the, Montreal's goal mouth with the two red cards.
I think my favorite part of that was the Montreal fan base. Whatever, I forget who the ref was. He comes out, obviously, singles VAR, throws away the yellow, pulls out the red, shows the red to Joseph. Crowd goes crazy just as he turns to give the red to, I forget who their captain's name is.
Wanyama.
Yeah, Wanyama. And then he gives the red to them. And then the crowd starts booing. It's like... He put his hands around Joseph's neck. Like, how are you guys booing right now?
Yeah, I know.
Like, that's what you just got to take. Like, okay, I get it. And I think and that was Joseph's response. Just shook his head. Yeah, like, that's the right call. I mean, that's the only thing you can do in that situation. Both players let the situation and the moment get away from them. And I think that, luckily it was at the end of the game that didn't put either team in a diminished position. I feel like it hurt Atlanta more than it hurt Montreal, because at that point, like, Atlanta was going into the final 15 minutes a man up. I mean, they were still a man up, but they were a man up with Joseph Martinez out on the field versus being a man up and just trying to get out of there, you know?
So yeah. David Gantar was a ref's name. I thought he was wildly, wildly inconsistent. I agree with you. I think if Joseph had been in the game again, we probably would have won it. But then Sosa had that chance at the end to seal it, but unfortunately pitted it over the bar. That we can probably move on to Columbus if you want.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this will kind of springboard us into Columbus, which is talking about Sosa and Brad Guzan. The age-old, age-before-D debate, Guzan, continues to rear its head after Guzan let in, you know, several goals that you can argue maybe shouldn't have, that you could potentially argue that Can maybe gets a better hand on, but you know, hindsight's always 20/20 there. And then Alex Hoffner asking, is it just me or is Sosa been getting worse? Maybe teams are planning around him. I think that's been the case ever since the first couple matches this season. I think that the way that teams contain Sosa kind of makes or breaks that back line through the midfield, because he really is that linchpin to the defense that can unlock that ability to move the ball forward, and then also the defense kind of forming around where he is going forward or tracking back. So I think that Brittany S mentioned, like, I think with him it's probably just fatigue. He's played every single game this season, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So that's a huge responsibility for one player, particularly for a defender, and with the role that we've tasked him to do. I'm hoping it's just fatigue. I don't think that he's the type of player that all of a sudden just isn't capable by any means. I think it is just the situation that he's been put in, and fatigue, and then also just the other things going on around him, like the defense consistently rotating out as Miles and others have been on international duty and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I think personally, I think it's more, I do think teams have a game plan for Santiago Sosa. I think it's more of him missing Miles Robinson, because him, Walks, and Robinson formed something really strong together. And as, you know, Miles has been out and Walks and Franco have been in, and then we've gone, you know, like you're saying, Kev, there's been some rotation. I think that's been the problem. I've heard some people think, well, Heinz is not there anymore, so that maybe that's the problem. I think, you know, Sosa is still a young kid. I think there was a stat a few weeks ago that he's only played 39 professional games. Wow. I mean, he's played in Atlanta more than he's played anywhere. Like, River, right, he only had a couple of games because he's so young.
Right.
I think he's 20 or 22, but he just hasn't had those opportunities to play. And I think part of it, he's 22. I think part of it is he just needs time to acclimate and to figure out, okay, what are some small different things I need to be doing? Maybe a guy like Pineda can do that, because Seattle have a whole bunch of different looks. So I'm not worried about Sosa. I think it's just kind of acclimatizing to different situations.
Yeah. What about Guzan? How are you feeling about Guzan right now? Especially having a couple of games without him and seeing, like, to Max's point, like, is Guzan the most expensive keeper in the league good?
No.
You know, is
not anymore.
So that was my question. Is he the highest paid? He's not the highest paid keeper in the league.
Is he really? He's the highest paid by, I believe, $300,000 to $400,000, which is basically half his paycheck.
Yeah. So you're getting into the Howard debate there at a certain point, where he was at the end of his career a DP in goal, and not, you know, those teams were not any better having him there year over year for the money that they were spending to have him back there.
All right, I'm going to tell you one second to verify. Yep. I'm sorry. No, I was right. I was wrong about what I said. So, yeah, Guzan's the highest at 805,000. Then Kenneth Vermeer from LEF. Oh, this was last year. Oh, Vermeer is 750,000. Andre Blake's on 600,000. And then we go into the fives from there. But, you know, Stefan Fry at Seattle, he's on 500,000. And yeah. Sean Johnson from NYC is on 510. Tim Mealy is on 500,000. Yeah. Where is Galese's on 410, which is, man, they got a good deal with him.
Shit, I'd give Sean Johnson a 150K raise and just steal him.
Well, yeah. I mean, Matt Turner, who's been just lighting this league on fire and won this country a Gold Cup, he's on 375,000.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, Guzan is definitely not.
I think that Kendrick mentioned this. Like, you're basically paying for his tenure and leadership at this point, not for the performance on the field. And at a certain point, mm-hmm. that money doesn't make sense, right? And I don't know if that's right. this year or if it's next year, but I don't see it going much longer than next year, personally, based on what it's costing the team.
Yeah, I think I'll be shocked if Guzan's with us next year. And to be honest with you, I feel like from what I've seen, I don't know if I could tell a difference between Ken or Guzan right now.
Right.
So
that's my point is that, I mean, and Kendrick makes that point is like, if Ken was actually an MLS caliber keeper, someone would have come and gotten him. Like,
no, totally disagree. There are only how many teams? 27 teams? There's 28 yeah. spots for a keeper. We've got plenty more keepers that are MLS caliber that just don't have a starting spot.
Yeah.
So I just don't think there's anywhere for him to go.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, to your point, Dan, I don't see that much of a difference that warrants necessarily keeping him in there. But I don't know how you can justify not having him in there, if that makes sense. Like, I can see why he's in there just from the optics standpoint and what he contributes to the team. But I don't know that I see enough of a difference between Can and him that I'm like, oh my God, Guzan is a liability over what Alec
Oh yeah,
Can
I don't
doing.
Think he's
you
a
know
liability.
What I mean? Like, I don't think that Alec Can is that significant of a standout. Like, is he just as capable? Yeah, I'll make that argument. Is he more capable? I don't know if that I'd go that far necessarily. I don't think that either one is putting you in a position to lock up games week over week and making these crazy saves or even, you know, getting the ones like this past week that were very, very in the realm of possibility to be kept out of goal. So,
yeah, I feel like so Can will be 32. He'll be 32 next year. Brad's going to be, he's going to be 37 in September. So I feel like with the amount that Brad is making, I feel like Can has enough experience that he could take the spot from Guzan next year. And then you bring Rios Novo, potentially, depending on how he goes. Into the fold, but I feel like a goalkeeper is a position where you want to have experience. I don't think it's a good idea having your first string keeper to be like an 18-year-old, 19-year-old.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, Tim Howard played, I mean, he's 42 now, and he left the league, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? So he played till 38 or 39, which is, you know, that's kind of what I'm thinking is our expiration date on Guzan. Like, I don't know that he's necessarily gone this year, but I don't see him playing for another 5 years with the team, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like there's enough, we've seen enough that he's a decent goalkeeper, and he's still, I feel like in goalkeeper years, he's still got some time to develop a little bit more. And the more games he gets, like if he's the goalkeeper next year, then he's the guy and can get better. But I don't know. Guzan got us an MLS Cup, so I'm fine with him.
Agreed. So let's talk about Columbus. What a game! What a game! So let's do
it
this.
It definitely wasn't boring, was it?
Let's start this. Was it a fluke?
Will
Columbus be a fluke game whenever you start looking ahead?
No, I don't think it will, because even though I feel like we've had decent, like with under RV, we've had a lot of potential. Like, we played really well against Columbus at home. I feel like we played really well, for the most part, in Montreal. And so I feel like there have been a lot of cases where we just haven't got the result, but we've been playing pretty decently. I think Columbus was the best that we've ever played under Rob. So I feel like this is just something to just build on. And I could see us, I feel like our trajectory is going up. So I don't think it's a fluke. No, I feel like if you put Joseph Martinez in that game, it could be a better, even better result.
Which was it more? Atlanta's better playing or Columbus's worse playing?
I think it's a function of both, to be honest with you. I would like to see more that it's our playing, because, I mean, we caught those two offside goals that they got called back. I mean, that's on us, like, you know, defending them better. Yeah, set pieces are Matt Wisniewski in the chat, perhaps, saying set pieces still killing us. Yeah, they are. It's frustrating. But I feel like there's a lot that we can
that second goal, I don't know how the hell that happened, man. Just completely unmarked.
Well, Miles was trying to get in front of him. I think it was on Miles. Jonathan Mensah, geez, man. I mean, he scored on us at home. He scored on us in their stadium. Man, it's been... But I feel like, haven't set pieces just been our kryptonite since the days of Tata?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But like I said, there's a lot to build on. I feel like we're going in a positive way, and I think Columbus right now is going in a downward trajectory as well. So it probably was a really good, you know, we had the frustration with Montreal and the anger and the fight back, but then we also had, I think we caught Columbus at a good time, but still they were not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination. No. I mean, Darlington Nagbe, Jossy Zardes had a great World Cup, and Nagby's just fantastic. So I think I still think you have to be a good team to beat them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So what are your big takeaways from that game that you want to see going forward, or big takeaways? And also, what are some of the things that you expect to see maybe improved upon going forward as well?
So Barco is a positive. Let's continue that.
Kidding.
Rosetto, I feel like we've got someone who can, quite frankly, take over Ibarra's spot if he can continue to play that way. Because Ibarra's so young. And then thirdly, I think George Bello played a really good game as well.
Dude, what a fantastic game for Bello. Not just defensively speaking, but again, like offensively, he's just such a standout defender for me in the way that like Escobar was, right? Like, that you just see these strokes of, I don't want to say genius, but brilliance of him offensively that like we don't really have on the right side of the ball right now on the defensive side. Like, it's been interesting to watch that transition as,
especially with Lennon out. Yeah.
Right. As Escobar's left. And now George has taken on that role essentially of doing that wing back of taking the ball up and really making some legitimate opportunities on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, like I said, that link up play with Barco may have been the best pass, the best single pass all season for this team. I think.
Just running on a loop, man.
Just so great. And again, just the ability and wherewithal of them to, and that's what we were expecting, right? It was like the more that they play, the more Bello plays, that sort of chemistry and awareness would come. And so it's nice to see the team just playing fast and loose and being able to just do what they want to do and see some results come of that has been really nice to see.
Yeah. I think an area to improve on would be just the defense. Not, and I don't think the defense played bad. I feel like, I can't remember. Oh, the second goal was a penalty, wasn't it? The yeah, Santos second, penalty.
Both of them, yeah.
Well, the first one against Mensah was, I mean, that was just a breakdown. But I feel like they played well, but I feel like there's just, they just need more time to gel to include Franco.
Yeah.
Because playing defense, I mean, you've got to have communication down. I learned that playing soccer with you, Kevin. Because you're always chatting, telling people what to do, quarterbacking it, and it's so good to have to play with someone like that, because you just feel more confident.
You get tunnel vision. That's always the problem. Is like you're just focusing on. You need somebody to kind of see where everything else is going on.
Yeah, quarterback it. But yeah, I don't think Robertson played his best game. I thought Franco was better until. Jeez, I don't know what he was doing when he let up that penalty. Know, just ran in and hip checked whoever it was.
So
it's like,
bad.
Come on, dude. But yeah, I would love to hold on to Bello for another season. I mean, he could be. It would just be fantastic.
Dude, how much do you think? Okay, this is a fun conversation because I think that we'll be more in agreement than this Barco conversation that we started this season on with the $30 million price tag. What do you think?
Going up, value's going up.
What do you think the price tags will be for Miles and Bello? Because there's no way we keep both of them. What do you think they'll both end up going for if you were to speculate?
I think the high end for Miles is between 8 and 10. Because he's a center back. And quite frankly, he's American, which I think right now, I think American players are going at a discount, which I think is very, very unfortunate. But it's just going to be a matter of time until, quite frankly, they take over the world. Bello, because he's a left back, because he's more in demand, which is a more in demand position. Yeah. I could see him going for, I don't know. He's so young, though. I mean, I think a team would take a flyer at $12 million, maybe.
Okay.
What do you think?
I was thinking 11 or 12 for Miles, and then, you know, potentially because Bello's so young, like maybe you can get as high as 15. Like I think not outside of the, like just because of his age alone, and again, both players having like. There's no doubt that both of their stock went up tremendously coming off of Gold Cup. And the more USMNT appearances that they both get, the better that's going to be long term. Like, it's just, it's undeniable. Like, Bello's 19 right now. Like, if he has another year like this year, I don't know how he goes for any less than that, like 14, 15 range, honestly. Yeah. Especially, Miles agree with you. He's going to be way more in demand as being left back for sure. But
yeah, my only thing about Miles, I think whatever Miles is sold for, the fan base is going to be disappointed.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
they're
going to
be disappointed no matter what.
Yeah, because just because there's a lot more competition.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, if he wants to get over to. I feel he has to go to Europe. I would love him. I know everyone says German League, Bundesliga, whatever. I would love Miles Robertson. And I think it would be a better test than the German leagues would be going to the championship in England. Because
that'd be wild.
It's, I mean, talk about a dogfight, man. It's it's a great league it can be a great league to watch, but it is just, it's just such a dogfight. I feel like that would really help improve.
Oh, yeah.
So he should definitely go to Birmingham City because I feel like we're in need of a center back anyway. He's going to get a whole lot of work. And then it's probably a good springboard to the Premier League upper tier league. Thank you. Thank you.
Upper teague. I like that. I knew what you meant. So.
Yeah. Hashtag HB4D. Upper teague.
Any other comments on Columbus before we move to the download?
Oh, crumbs. Another thing on the Barco goal. he was in front of five defenders.
Yeah.
Which I don't think anybody's really paid that much attention to. But we haven't seen, you know, we would always just see, and I hope it's apparent to Barco, because we've always seen him dribble up, get into a little bit of resistance,
and then pass it around those defenders rather than moving through them. Like that exactly. That's what we've been clamoring for. Either take a shot from outside of them or make some sort of space to the interior side of that so that a ball can be passed behind the line. So it was definitely nice to see that development. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think he played in Montreal. I think the past few games have shown Jackson Conway needs a lot more development.
I agree.
I feel like he's strong. He is strong.
Yeah.
He can, I mean, he was pulling defenders around in the box, and also the absolute cannon that he put Mensah's face.
Face was going to fall off. Oh, man, that looked like it was going on frame too. I mean, obviously it's hard to kind of follow that trajectory, but what a rocket, man. My word.
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty much what I've got. I mean, Barco was shooting from outside the box again. And another con to Jackson Conway. All right. Great thing about LAFC.
They're not first in the West and have shown a negative trajectory over the past like 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I listened to one of their podcasts. I think it was The Heart of LAFC. They're great. I didn't realize how many podcasts they have. They have almost as many as Atlanta United.
I need to find who their silly show is to counterpoint.
Well, the one I listened to, I think it was The Heart of LAFC or something like that. It was really good. They've done a really good job there. So you should definitely go check them out. So yeah, LAFC. Where are they?
They're in seventh in the West.
Sorry, Kevin. Is this the Kevin the load?
You couldn't handle a Kevin load, Dan.
No, absolutely nobody can. So they've got 23 points, which is more than us. Their past few games, they haven't had a win since, holy moly. Past matches, this isn't helpful. They haven't had a win in a while because their past five games have been three losses and two draws. They're rated just about around the same rating as Atlanta United, which is interesting because I feel like everybody's in agreement that the East is a lot stronger than the West this year. And Elliot Beaven saying they don't have Mark Anthony Kay anymore. So the Mac has gone. They still have some guys. So they lost. Let's just go through the scores. So they lost to San Jose 2-1. They lost to Sporting Kansas City 4-1. Drew with Minnesota 2-2. Drew with Vancouver Whitecaps, who seem to be getting a lot better, 2-2. And then they lost to Portland Timbers 2-1. So they've been showing some not good form lately, because that's great for me. I don't really like Bob Bradley. I think I just don't like his attitude. I don't like his attitude. But I know a lot of people love him. It's great. This is in the Benz. We've only played them twice. We beat them 5-0 last time they came to the Benz. I just remember Jan Moutinho just getting, I think he got a red card in the last 5 minutes, and he just got worked all night. It was fantastic. I believe that was the game that Chris McCann got a red card in the first two minutes.
That's right. That's right.
And then it got overturned.
And then Eric was going on about the freeze frame second by second of how that slide came in and all of that.
So and then we went down 4-0, I believe, in the span of I think it was 5 minutes.
That's right. And then we clawed back to the very end. That was the beginning of 2 years ago or early last year. I can't remember.
I think it was 19. Yeah, it was 19 because the ball was there.
Yeah.
And Pity was sulking on the bench, I think. But I just remember Julian Gressel I think it was Diamande was trying to do some stuff with the ball, just wasting time, and Julian Gressel was like pushing him and being like real aggro on him, which was great. I love to see it, but we still didn't manage. So we've still got a good, 9-4 goal tally on them. I feel like the way the LAFC are going, I mean, the impression was that they would beat the, gosh, I'm going to have to go back to it now. I'm sorry. Who were they playing last? Okay, San Jose. They should have beaten San Jose, right? But they didn't. They lost 2-1. So this should be, hopefully, a lot of good vibes because has gone out of LAFC. Bob Bradley doesn't strike me to be the kind of guy who's going to, you know, get everyone together and burn some sage to get the bad spirits out. I believe he's more of a kind of guy that's going to, you know, be a soft talker and, you know, give you a kick up the ass when you need it. So I'm hoping that it continues to keep falling apart for LAFC, obviously. It's great that they're going to be Atlanta. I think we're in the upper trajectory where they're on the down. So I'm going to go 2-0 Atlanta United. I'm saying Barco scores a goal, and I'm saying Joseph scores a goal.
All right. Well, we are in agreement with two of the things on your prediction, which is the number of goals that Atlanta scores, as well as one of those goals coming from Joseph Martinez. I'm calling for 2-1 Atlanta, just because Atlanta continues to allow so many goals week over week. It seems like, I don't know how they keep a clean sheet right now. I don't have confidence that this team is capable of doing that particularly. Like, even though LAFC is in a slump, they still have a lot of offensive firepower that I think is going to give us a little bit of a challenge. I mean, you've got a golden boot winner leading that charge, right? Like, I mean, I don't know how Atlanta keeps a clean sheet. Yes, it's at home. Yes, I agree. Both teams are on sort of opposite slopes of their year-end trajectory or mid-season trajectory, depending on which way you cut it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that Atlanta kind of builds on the momentum coming off of last game. Joseph being back will only help continue to do that. And so I'm saying 2-1 Atlanta with my two goals coming from Joseph and Hosetu. I think that he is going to slot one of those in. Yeah. Yep.
Fantastic.
So Mr. Tim gets us his score prediction in here. Not that it really matters, but he's calling for a 3-3 draw in a barn burner. Who you got scoring those there, Mr. Tim? Who else we got here while he's typing that up? 3-1 good guys from Max Plays Games. Brittany S. also saying the same thing. You think we can keep a clean sheet? Elliot Beaven, 4-0 Atlanta. Brittany S., 3-2 Atlanta. Kendrick, if we keep a clean sheet, it's because the other team didn't try. Chiefs coach Steve, I'm also 2-1 good guys train. Kendrick saying 2-2 draw. Matt Wisniewski, 3-2 Atlanta. Joseph with a brace, and Moreno slotting home the third. All right.
Man, Elliot Beaven, if we get 4-0, that would be just... Oh.
Yeah. If Tim doesn't answer within the next 2 minutes on who his three are, I'm assuming that he said Guzan hat trick, and we'll leave it at that.
He's probably saying Barco, Moreno, and Joseph. I bet probably. That's who he's saying. Try and get all the guys.
Spread it out.
So what do you think? Is Araujo going to be starting? Don't worry about visas. Just what do you think?
No. I think even if he's available, he doesn't start.
Yeah. If he's available, I think he comes
if he's available, he plays, but I don't think he starts either way.
Why?
I just think that it's too soon. I mean, that's a lot to put on a player that's just arrived and has been training with the team for a week. Like, I think that he can come in and still make a difference late in the game without getting that starting position and putting the entire, like, the whole team then has to react to him. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's a weird thing that everybody has to respond to and figure out, that I think is going to maybe mess with some of that development that we've seen in recent weeks. That could, you don't want to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of deal, right? Like, he's certainly going to be an addition to this team and certainly has a place to play, but I think that it's going to take at least a couple weeks before he's starting. But I think that he still could come in late and make a big difference whenever those key pieces aren't necessarily playing, because it's late in the game anyway.
But he's in pre, I mean, he's had a preseason. I believe he even played a game with Leal. Like, he's match ready.
It's not about being match ready from a fitness level. It's more the chemistry level. Like, I think that right now this team is clicking in a manner that they haven't this season. And I don't know that bringing in a new player that none of them have played with is going to help that. You know what I mean? Like, they're building and expanding on runs and awareness around where everyone's at and how that run of play takes shape, because they're practicing and playing together week over week. He hasn't been a part of that. It's not about his fitness level. I think he can still come in that last, you know, 15, 20 minutes and have a standout performance without being right out the gate.
So who are you going to play on right wing then?
Who did it's we like have in there?
Lopez, Chol, Dam. I think those are your options.
I think so too.
And I don't like any of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've been more on the Lopez train than the others, and that would probably be who I would pick of the three, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Lopez definitely has had more starts.
Which is what we did against Montreal, so.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I just want to see the guy. I want to see some.
Oh, I want to see him too. So yeah. Do you think he starts if he's available?
I would.
Okay.
I'm just going to do it. I paid $12 billion for you. Get on that field. Get on that field. Send the ball home. Send the ball home. It wants to go home.
I like it. I like it.
Now, I'm just giving you a hard time, but I just wanted to talk about it.
Oh, man. All right. So thank you guys so much for tuning in and hanging out with us. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Tonight, the show will go up on Podcatchers because I don't have to work right after this broadcast, so I have the time to do that editing and get that up. So if you're listening to us, however you found us, be sure to like, subscribe, tell a friend, leave some stars, leave a review, leave a thumbs up, hit a bell icon, whatever it is. Just start tapping that phone or tapping the mouse on whatever's available on that screen. So you can find us each individually online. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me at DNJMS, DNJMS on Twitter, or to the power of Dan, and follow me and Will Bauer on, because the only person who's followed me on Peloton.
Find me as well at The Architect. That's at @B_ARC, TECT. Find all the boys over on Twitter at Home Before Dark. That's before spelled B and the number 4. Like Tim says, just tap that. Whatever it is, just tap it.
Just tap it.
So thank you guys so much for tuning in, however you found us. You make this show what it is each and every week. And until next week, as always, be home before dark.
So just to shout out to you, Kevin, because you've been working your ass off lately, and you're getting up at stupid o'clock in the morning to these workouts that I keep getting these bings on my Apple Watch. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Oh, God, he's been working out again. 500 calories? I mean, and still being able to do the show? I mean, that's a lot of work. So thanks, Kev. Everybody should be grateful. The 10 people in the trap and the 7 people who actually listen to the podcast should. Myself, are one of those 7.
I think between me, you, and Tim, we get an even 20 that listen. That's nice. Yeah. It's nice. I do it for the people. So
that's true. Shout out to Chico Steve. It was great to see him in real life down at the Rush Union Fields where my son is playing. We've got our first tournament this weekend, so that should be fun.
That's awesome.
And let's go thrash the shit out of LAFC because they're just a wannabe Atlanta.